Now, once again, here's Mark.
Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And for the next 2 hours, we can talk cars if that's what you want to talk about. If you want to talk about cars, a gas, diesel, motorhomes, lawnmowers, weed eaters, it won't start. Pretty much anything with a spark plug or anything that uses some kind of a fuel to make something happen is probably within the area of we can talk about and cover for you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We can take as many as 8 to probably about 14 calls in a 2 hour show. So, sometimes it gets busy, sometimes it doesn't, but if you have a question or if there's a dispute in your family and you want me to settle it, then 602-508-0960. This show is brought to you by Action Auto Repair and a variety of other good shops in the Valley. In 1988, I created the best repair shops in the Valley list, long before a lot of these other lists. The idea was is that these guys are personal friends of mine, and I know they're honest, they're dependable, they're going to be around tomorrow for your warranty, they're not fly-by-night, so forth and so on. And that list still stands. And there's a promise in that list that says this: if you have a dispute with the shop, the shop's obligated to go through a Better Business Bureau process. If the Better Business Bureau determines the shop should give you X amount of dollars back or perform some kind of service for you, and the shop doesn't, then I will up to $2,000. I think it's $2,000 or $5,000. I don't even remember, to be honest with you, because I've never paid it. So the idea is there is a dispute resolution process we've created that has so far done well for us. And like I said, we've been on radio in the Valley since 1988. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair. Tom up at I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner up there, has a family-owned auto repair shop that served Deer Valley and the Phoenix area since 1983, and I first met Tom in 1983. He was selling what they called scopes. If you remember, people would say, can you put my car on the scope? And the scope was supposed to tell us what's wrong with it. No, the scope wasn't to tell us what's wrong with it. It gives us data. We're supposed to know whether it's good data or bad data. And that's kind of how it worked. But the scope wasn't that intelligent. The guy pushing the buttons had better be. But anyway, Tom was one of those guys. He could make those scopes dance like you can't believe. So if you're up in that area, again, I-17 in Deer Valley, then may I suggest if you don't already have a repair shop that you take your car into Action Auto Repair for an oil change and see how they treat you. All righty, 602-508-0960, and we do have a caller. Who'd that be?
Say hello to Don.
Don, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark Salem, Don Lynn. I just called to thank you. I told you I would. You helped me problem solve it on the crankcase ventilation hose going up to the airbox with a throttle body issue.
Uh-huh.
I cleaned and lubricated the throttle body and the airbox. So anyway, I still have that rattle in the tachometer. And I was wondering, You mentioned a friend of yours that owns a place here in Mesa on Main Street, and that I could take it in and have him check it out. But do you have any idea, is that it's the 01 Sonoma four-cylinder pickup, and is that an electric tachometer? Is there some reason that tach, is there some kind of a mechanical interlink or interface between the electronic part and a mechanical drive or something?
No, the tachometer is going to get its signal off the negative side of the coil.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to go through an ECM and an electronic control module. Let me ask you a question. The tachometer, just briefly tell me what the needle's doing.
It's hanging up around 3,000 RPM.
Okay.
And then when I let off on the gas, it'll immediately drop. But it does hang up. Every time I take it up to shift gears to about 3,000.
Okay.
But it starts making more and more noise as it approaches the 3,000.
Okay. Is the needle dragging on the back?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
It's free.
Okay. This is just time for a question and answer, okay? Just a yes or a no, because we'll get through this faster.
Okay.
So the needle moves freely, but there's noise associated with this?
Yes.
Is the noise also speed related?
Yeah, it's
otherwise, the faster you go, the faster you go, the faster the noise moves. If you go to idle, the noise goes to idle. If you go to 50, it goes to 50.
Right, but it still makes noise at idle also.
Okay. And can you put the back of your hand on the face of the tachometer? Can you feel the noise?
No, well, it's way behind the instrument panel.
No, I said...
Oh, no, it's definitely coming from the panel, from the tachometer itself.
Okay. All right. I've never heard of this before in my life because the tachometer's electronic.
Yeah, I know.
So I don't know. Is this noise that you're hearing only when the car is moving or when the tachometer's moving?
No, well, it's sitting still at idle.
And it's making the noise.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I would suggest that when it's not tachometer related and it's not speedometer related, if it's making noise, it's just not.
Well, when I'm sitting still and I hit the gas, I can increase the noise just by the engine RPM, and the tachometer will go up to 3,000 at idle. I mean, sitting still, not rolling, and it'll hang up. Sitting still, the tach itself.
Okay, okay. Well, we're on two different pages because you're talking. Your hypothesis is surrounded by something mechanical in the tachometer operation, and I'm unfamiliar with that.
Oh,
I've never seen a mechanical tachometer, so I don't know even what that would look like. To be honest with you, it would be an old mechanical speedometer that's going to have a speedo cable from the transmission up to the back of the odometer and speedometer, and then you could feel, if there was a problem with the cable, you could feel it with the back of your hand. You'd put it on the piece of glass. But see, you're just describing stuff that I'm not familiar with. So
it's just an audible noise, no real vibration. Just
okay, I think what's best for you is to just call it a noise and have somebody, you show them the noise. And I wouldn't, if I were you, I wouldn't send them in the direction of the tachometer and the speedometer. Just, here, listen to this. Close your eyes. Listen to this. Don't look at the dashboard. I can make this happen. What is that noise?
Mm-hmm.
And now, is it an electrical noise? Is it a whining noise, or is it something that you think you could feel?
Well, kind of a combination of both.
Okay.
It feels like if I could get my hand back there, I could feel a vibration, but it's more of an audible noise.
Okay. Well, there's a cable that goes from the speedometer head down to the transmission. So, no matter where you touch it, you should be able to feel it. You could feel it on the dash.
Oh,
so, that's why I've gone back three or four times to the same place. Let's put our hand on the face of the dash. Let's move it from all the way to the left, all the way to the right when we're doing 50, 60 miles an hour, or when this noise is at its worst. And if that's the case, then why can't this be a speedometer cable? However, the speedometer cable and the tachometer with the needle going to 3 and then holding there, that's probably going to be a separate problem. So I don't think the noise is the tachometer, but then I've been wrong before. But Thompson's Auto Repair is on Main Street just east of Stapley, and he has technicians that are old and gray that won't have any problem. But stay away from your diagnosis. Give them and demonstrate the symptoms. That would be the very best thing for you and the cheapest for you. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. You betcha.
Thank you.
You betcha. And that's Thompson's Auto Repair. I'm writing that down now. And that's at Main Street just east of Stapley on the south side of the road, and they've been around a long time. It's so important that we have that conversation at the front counter of the auto repair shop. So if you go in and say, ladies, and I say this because this is what my husband said to check the brakes, and I can't tell you how many times it ain't the brakes when we hear my husband said, at least 50% of the time. It's a brake-related noise, and perhaps the application of the brakes makes it happen, but a clunk on a brake application is a suspension shift. So it's a ball joint or a lower control arm or an upper control arm bushing. It's something like that. It has nothing to do with the brakes, but the brakes create the shift that creates the noise. So it's so important to just talk about the symptoms. And it's okay to insist, in my book, it's okay to insist, can I take someone for a ride, and I promise I won't have them for a half a day. I promise I'll bring them right back. I'm going to demonstrate the noise to them, and then if they want, then they can. We'll switch places, and they can, you know, make sure they can make the noise, because that's valuable time. that's just really valuable time when you get that kind of one-on-one. But what can happen is you can't take the technician for a 37-minute road drive. You just can't do that. You have to be prepared to show them the problem and then perhaps switch places. But it's not fair. Speaking of not fair, that's a bad segue. Let me change that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We talked last week and the week before. There's some big money coming into town, and they're buying chains and big auto repair shops. There's been a lot of ownership changes here recently, especially in the tire industry. I know of three big tire chains that have been just been purchased, and they're going to be under new ownership. I know that there's one big, huge auto repair shop in town. It's not me, and that big and huge wouldn't. There's one big guy in town that he's not allowed to say what he sold it, but they handed him a check, and he walked out the door and said, "See ya." And he sold him his building, his land, his business, the equipment, the employees, everything, to the tune of somewhere in the vicinity of $6 million is the story. It's important for you to understand that, if you're going to do business with a business under new ownership, just make sure you're well aware of the parameters and what typically happens, which is we just spent a whole lot of money because this guy really does make good money. But if we raise our prices a little bit here, or if we take some of the technician pay away over here, or if we do this, or if we eliminate the 401k, then we'll make even more money. And everybody that's buying is a money maker, is someone who does this for a living. It's not guys that are, there's not some rich guy out there that's a guy that always wanted to own repair shops and he's buying up Phoenix. That's not what happened. These are mega purses of money that are buying, and it's, for me, it's kind of unusual because the net profit on a repair shop is between 8% and 12%. So if a guy does $1 million a year, he might make $100,000 to $120,000 a year if he makes $1 million. And there's guys down there in the 3% and 4% and 5% range. There's guys that are brag about 10% and 20% range. It's somewhere in that area. But I think that you have to make in that 20% range in order to pay back the big debt when it costs you millions to buy the place. I'm thinking. I'm a car guy. All I'm saying is I think it would behoove you to pay particular attention to pricing and front counter discussions with respect to if all of a sudden there's new people there, or all of a sudden it's, hey, you're at 30,000 miles, you need a 30,000-mile service, because that really is a terrible front counter opportunity. Those are the kinds of things you look for. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, it's 20 minutes after the hour. Actually, it just changed 21 after the hour of 10 o'clock. And you're welcome to join us if you'd like. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And you call up and Gil answers the phone and he says, "What's your name?" And he puts you on hold and then he whispers in my ear to take the next caller and he gives me your name. And that's how it kind of works. So we have five lines and they're available right now. 602-508-0960. Auto Dynamics has been around Sun City since 1982, but I've known Chuck Nyday since 1968. So I can vouch for the family and I can vouch for their honesty and their integrity. I can vouch. And we all have shortcomings, including myself. And so the real close friends will say, "Did you know that Mark does it?" Yeah. Oh, yeah, we all know Mark's short-tempered or Mark's doesn't like whatever. It's just the way it is. But I'm proud of Auto Dynamics. They do a good job. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. And when someone calls and says, "Sun City area, do you have a favorite shop?" then that's the one I use, Auto Dynamics. And like I said, I've known Chuck for a very long time, and I know he's an honest and reputable guy. When it comes to picking a shop, this is kind of what's going on in our world on the shop side. On one hand, we have, in the old days, until just in the last, 5 years ago, let's go back 5 years, We used to do everything on a 3,000-mile oil change interval. So you'd come in at 3,000, and our job was to change your oil and your filter, and we were also supposed to look your car over. The fluids, the belts, the hoses, and the tires, and if you could peek at the brakes, you peeked at them. So that was our job. During that period of time, those were going to be items that we may or may not bring to your attention in two ways. You have a bad oil leak at the back of your transmission, and it's a rear main seal, and there's a thrust bushing in there, so we need to pull the tail housing off. We're going to put a new bushing in there and put a new seal and fix that leak. Oh, yeah, my wife said something about that. That's kind of how that happens. Well, today, most of you that have a car that's 5, maybe 8 years old, you have oil change intervals, not looking at what it says on your windshield sticker, but you have, if you're using a synthetic oil, you've got oil change intervals somewhere between 10 and 15,000 miles. Well, many of you don't even do 10,000 miles a year. So now we don't get to see you 3 or 4 times a year. And it's called a reoccurring sales opportunity. Okay? And every time you bring your car in for an oil change, we get a chance to look your car over. So many of the repair shops that I know of in the Valley are honest about what you need. And many of us subscribe to the same kind of, you've got a problem here, it's something you should budget for, here's the symptom that you're likely to have somewhere down the road, and when it happens, then that's the time to get going on it. That's the best kind of talk, because you go, oh, well, I do have that symptom. Yes, I know what you're talking about. It's nothing to be concerned about. You don't have to fix it right now, but you can do it down the road. Then there's people who say, oh, no, this is a death-defying problem. You have to take care of it right now. So you have both sides of that. But the real problem is that we've lost the ability to have you in more than once a year. So most people are scheduled for an oil change on their new cars once a year. So what we're doing, what some people in our industry are doing, is they put the little door sticker in the upper left-hand corner of your windshield, and they're fudging the numbers. They're not calling you back in 10,000 miles. They're calling you back in 3 or 5. So you don't really know what it is unless you look at your odometer and you look up there. Okay, the odometer says 20,000 miles, and he's calling me back at 23,000 miles. So that's what it says up there on that sticker. You also have, on your newer model cars, you also have a reminder on an oil change. I would strongly suggest you go by that reminder, because it's very factual and it's a really high-tech way to look how many times you started it, how many times you warmed it up, how far you drove it, how far has this horse been exercised, how fast does the horse run, has he pulled a boat before, is he pulling a boat on a regular basis, or is this from the person's house to their work, which is 3 blocks away, and that's all the exercise this car gets. Those are the kinds of things that the computer takes into consideration. How many times you've had a heat cycle, which you got at full operating temperature and cooled it down to static or ambient temperature. That's called a heat cycle. Well, those are real good for your car. We implore you to go through a heat cycle, but many, unfortunately, simply don't need to drive their car that far, and so they just simply go to the grocery store 3 blocks away and come home. Then they go to church, and then they come home, so forth and so on. So there's this big dichotomy going on in our industry about what the guys that are changing the oil sticker and calling you back in at 3 or 4 or 5,000 miles when you have a 10,000 or 15,000 mile oil in your car. What do we draw? What conclusion do we draw from that? Unfortunately, it's just a bad one because that clearly favors them and not you. And then, of course, they're going to explain to you that your book doesn't apply to Arizona. Arizona is different. Unfortunately, the book applies to every state and every country that car sold in. So telling a customer that the book doesn't apply to them is, that's weak. Anyway, we have a caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Chad.
Chad, good morning.
Hey, Mark, good morning. Hey, I've got a 2007 Yukon XL, and last night got in the car to go to dinner, started the car and shut the door, and the interior, dome lights would not go off. checked all the doors, and they weren't on when we got in the car. Checked everything, got out, opened all the doors, closed all the doors, and they wouldn't go off. I had to disconnect the battery to make the lights go off.
Okay.
You got any suggestions?
Well, your 07's, you know, 13 years old, but let me ask you a question. Is the headlight knob a knob that you pull out and push in, or is it a rocker?
2 minutes.
No, you twist it.
Okay. Oh, okay, good. I think, but I've been wrong before, but I want you to try this. I think when you twist the knob, it changes the intensity of the dash lights, yes?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. My wife drives it more than me.
Okay. Oh, so this is where you're going to start blaming it on your wife.
I'm teasing you.
I'm okay. Here's what I'm thinking. If you have a twist knob and it pulls, you know, you pull it one notch out and you get parking lights, and you pull it all the way out and you get headlights. If you rotate that knob all the way to the left, it turns on the dome lights all the time. So this is something
we've seen before. Hold on for a second and all. Yeah, I got the key now. Let me go open the car and look at it.
Okay. All right, well, you got to do it in a minute and 5 seconds, so that's 66 seconds. But anyway, I just want you to touch the knob and rotate it to the left, and I bet it's at a stop position, and then if you rotate it to the right, there'll be an indent click. That's what I'm looking for. And if I fix your car over the radio, you're going to make a huge contribution next time the plate passes you in church.
There you go. Well, I've still got the battery disconnected, so I can't see it come on right now.
But that's okay. Did you feel what I was talking about on rotating the knob?
Yeah, it says, you know, it's just got an auto, so it's auto on, then you click it, and there's a.
Okay, so on the on, so maybe put it back where you found it, hook up the battery, and then play with it a little bit, but if that turns off the dome lights, then call me back and tell me, Mark, you finally got one right. That's what I want you to do. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we're going to take your call, and the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. Well, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we have one line that Hutch is waiting on, and that means we have four open lines, 602-508-0960. Hutch, I'm going to be with you in about 15 seconds. If you have a car and every time on Wednesday at 11 a.m. you hear a hiccup noise from the glove box, you're going to have to find somebody who finds that a life-altering situation, and that's Tom Blackwell at Blackwell Automotive. He's at 40th Street in Greenway, and that's exactly what he really thrives on, is finding something that nobody else can fix. Now, he does oil changes and everything. He does vintage cars, and he can take your 66 Roadrunner and put it back the way it was, but he can also change your wife's car and replace the air conditioning compressor or do anything that your wife's car needs as well. But if you want to get somebody just to root up and say, "Go, I got this," then Blackwell Automotive is a great place to start. Hutch, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, I'm Mark. How you doing?
I'm good.
A long-time listener. Called in a few times on different things. But started hearing strange noises on my power steering yesterday. And went through the, got some power steering fluid, put it in, it drained like almost immediately all the way down. It's like, you know, put some more and that seemed to do it. But I noticed that it's kind of leaking as well. And I don't know whether it would be a pump or what it would be going on.
Okay. Yeah. That's easy. All you're going to do is put your wife or one of your kids or your neighbors or somebody in the seat, the driver's seat, and make sure the parking brake's on. And you're going to start it up, and you're going to have them turn the steering wheel all the way to the right or to the left, to the lock position.
Yeah, and we did that.
You should be able to see the leak. It's because that's everything's under high pressure at that point.
Okay. It was coming out. And so would it be would it be the pump, or would it be the reservoir, or is it
kind of hard
to say?
Well, yeah, it is kind of hard to say.
It's a 09 F-150.
Okay. There's two hoses at the back of the pump. There's the low-pressure return line and the high-pressure pump line. sometimes if somebody changes out hoses, they'll mess up the O-ring inside the fitting. And sometimes you can go in there and just fix the O-ring. But if it's going to leak from the hose, it's going to leak where the swedge is at, where that big piece of umbrella metal has been swedged around the rubber hose. And typically it'll leak there at the swedge, or it could leak at the fitting. But I think the easiest thing to do is just kind of clean it up and have it nice and clean, and then turn the steering wheel all the way to the right, start it up, rev the motor, and that'll give you the best look at it. But really, Hutch, this is an easy thing. If you've got it leaking at the back of the pump, can you see that it comes out of the threads, or is it coming out of – now, the pump itself could have an O-ring around it, but it's not going to be pressure-related. This is a reservoir, so there's no pressure within the reservoir. So,
right.
And so there's a big difference between the suction line and the pressure line and then the reservoir with respect to how they leak. But if it's leaking good and you turn it to the right and you rev the motor, it's got to be on the pressure side of it.
Okay. Well, I was thinking probably the easiest thing for me to do, because I'm not a mechanic.
Okay.
And, you know, I didn't get underneath it, but I'm in the West Valley. So I'm on my way to Kurtz right now.
Okay.
while we drive. And I'm going to leave it at Kurtz, and I'm going to drop my key through the drop box. And I'm going to call Kurt Monday morning and say, "Hey, Kurt, remember me? He helped me with my rack and pinion and stuff. Yeah. You know, he took the test drive with me. So Kurt's a great guy."
No, and just tell him Mark Salem says that if you can't find the leak, then call him and he'll come over and help you.
That we'll get a master on it.
Yeah, no, he'll just laugh. He'll just laugh because I use stupid stuff like that, because the guys at the shops, they kind of know that that's what Mark says to people, and it's not the truth. It's just a nice introduction of letting Kurt know. And he probably already knows that Hutch at one time was a referral from Mark. And I don't get any money.
He definitely does.
Yeah. There's no money involved for Mark or anything like that at all. It's just I get pleasure out of these kinds of stories that you're driving across town to see Kurtz. And I like that. I'm impressed by that.
I'm in the West Valley in Peoria, so I just come straight down 101 south on it. And I get off at Bell and I'm right there. I mean, it's literally like maybe 15 miles. But okay. I figured since it was kind of a straight way that I don't really have to turn back and forth a whole lot. And so I wouldn't be using, you know, the power steering as much. You know, there's like six turns. So that would probably be okay. So.
Well, and then the only thing that I, on Kurtz, I don't really need to say this, but for the rest of us, I would say, if you're going to open up the power steering system, would you just go ahead and flush it too? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm going to have him go ahead and do a full service on it.
Yeah.
I've never had the plugs change.
Okay.
I've got it. I got 163,000 on it now, and I've put on 87,000. So I'm going to just have him do that.
Yeah.
The transmission, flush the transmission and all that crap.
Okay. Well,
I paid it off in April, so I figured this was a. The God's telling me that I had too much money in my pocket. I need to get rid of it somehow.
Okay, for not Kurtz, but my point was, is we have a reservoir that contains the reservoir of power steering fluid. Then we have a high pressure line that goes to the rack and pinion or the steering box, and then we have a low pressure return line. Well, my point was, is in it's okay for the consumer to say to the shop, if you're going to open up my power steering system and replace a hose or a seal or the pump or something like that, would you go ahead and flush the system real good for me? And that's real easy. We pull the return line off of the box and we put it in a 5-gallon bucket and we run a quart of fluid through it or something like that. So Kurtz is going to automatically do that, but for everybody else, it's just kind of a – just go ahead, or is there an extra charge for that? Because most of the time we won't even charge for it. It's just a matter of putting on the clamp on the low pressure line, return line last. That's all it is just put the clamp on last with a little bit of extra fluid. But anyway, got to run. But thank you, Hutch, very much for your kind words. And the lines are wide open. We have 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we've gone through almost the first hour of the Car Talk Show, and we're going to have another hour starting at 11 to 12, so we've still got time. This is not really the end of the show, but you can still call in. We have four open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Real quick, though, one of my best repair shops is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. He's been around since 1970. He's the only shop in Mesa that has qualified with the strict filter that I created and I insist that you pass. It's going to scrape the top 10% of the shops off, and that's what I want on this list. But more important than that, Thompson, I have known Brian's family and Thelma's family since 68 when I was in high school and was working at a gas station that was involved in the family's gas station business. So I've known these young people for a very long time. So when I tell you they're the salt of the earth, Brian knows the difference between right and wrong. Thelma's not going to let him vary from that. It's a good shop. They have good technicians. They know what they're doing. It's the only shop in Mesa I can recommend, but it is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, and they're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Brian, good morning. How can I help you?
Mark, I've got a 18 Colorado that I bought 2 months ago. 70,000 or just about 70,000 on it. It's got six cylinders, and I'm reading more in the book on it the other day, and it says to do a transmission change at 45,000 miles, and obviously I'm not going to know if it's been changed or not. And I'm looking under the hood, or I'm reading that there's no dipstick also, and I'm wondering, I guess just curious why there wouldn't be a dipstick, and why is the transmission so complicated they don't want anybody but the dealer or authorized person to do the job?
No, this is just kind of a drain and refill, and
yeah.
I'm surprised that at 18 that the car is what, 3 years old? I'm surprised that it's calling for a 40. And you said it's 40, right? It called for it 40. 40,000?
Yeah, 45,000.
Okay. And so really this is just a flush and fill is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And did they tell you what kind of fluid to use in it? Do you remember? Was it Dextron or anything?
I don't know. There might be another place in the book that would list
okay.
the fluid, not where I was looking. And I'm going to look again to make sure that it's 45. I'm almost positive it was at 45,000. And it just surprised me because I know so many of the, I think we had a 10-year-old Hyundai that they didn't want you to touch even until 100,000.
No, you're exactly right. That's why I'm kind of surprised about what you're telling me, because always had everything on a 30,000 mile or a 3,000 mile
right.
interval, and everything was a derivative of that. But today we're doing fluids at 100,000, not at 30. So we're
doing. Yeah, and the odd thing about it too, Mark, is that the coolant is like 100,000.
Okay.
You know, and yet the transmission they're saying 45, but I'll call you back if I've made a mistake, but I'm almost certain it said 45,000.
No, it's no problem. And it could say transmission fluid replacement, or it could be said replace transmission filter and fluid. I mean, there's going to be a line item there for whatever. But I'm not calling into what you're saying is suspect. But to continue the thought, we did all the fluids, and that's fluids, differential, transmission, power steering, and coolant. Those are the fluids.
Mm-hmm.
We did most all of those
right.
at somewhere around 30. And a lot of us would look at it, and if the fluid was really nice and pink, or in a Chrysler's case it was an amber color or whatever, we'd just say, okay, let's go to the next oil change. That's the way when most of us did it. Today,
mm-hmm.
fluids are at 100, so I'm really surprised that your 18 has a 45,000 call for the fluid. But it's okay. What you do is you say there is no dipstick. You just, when you call the shop, there is no dipstick. It's calling for a 30,000 or 45,000 mile service, and I'm there. Would you call me back with an estimate to just do that service? That's all.
Yeah, and I'll go to Thompson's. I'm in the East Valley now. I used to go to Kurtz when I lived in this neighborhood.
Okay.
But I'm in the East Valley now, and I'll go to Kurtz, and it's a 30-mile drive, but I'm not taking anything but to your recommended shops, and it's just the way I'm going to operate.
Well, I've picked the best let me comment on something else that came up yesterday again. The reason I don't name my shop is ever, or I try not to ever do it. I might do it, have to do it once a year, is because this isn't about my shop. This is about you and your car repair problems and about all the other good shops in the valley. I'm blessed because people, it's not too hard to find out where my shop is at, but in reality it's in Tempe, and it's not real convenient for people up in north by Kurtz. So that's why Kurtz is there, that's why Action is way up there on north, is because I need to kind of have that kind of coverage. You'll also notice that there's not any Tempe shops around me, and for obvious reasons. But I'm gonna end your call with a shop. Go ahead.
You need to find a shop east of Stapley.
You're right.
If you can.
No, I used to have. I'm all ears. If the guy's been in business for 5 years and he has a pretty good review, and basically anything north of four stars in the excellent is fine. You're always going to have, you know, a one star full of people that are mad at you for something. I can't hold anybody to a level that I can't be. Like Salem is 4.2 at this one, 4.3 here, 4.5 at the Better Business Bureau. Well, I hold everybody to that standard, but there's a whole lot of people out there that have three reviews and they have a five-star rating, and I don't know that that represents their ability to fix cars right. Nevertheless, I don't care. So if you're this won't be a problem, but would you email me back and just tell me what happened on this? Because that's I have to stop saying that everything in the last 5 years is a 100,000-mile call. If your Colorado is calling for something different.
Well, I'm going to check now, and then I'll just call your call screen, your producer back, and tell them yay or nay, and then you'll know.
Okay. All right. Well, that'd be fine. Thank you very much for that. Thank you. 602-508-0960. Gil snoring in my ear. That means that he doesn't have any callers, so you're welcome. And right now you'd get in real quick. 602-508-0960. And another good shop in the valley is Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue and Indian School. I'm really happy to have them because Bob and Ellen, Bob runs the shop, Ellen runs the front counter. They're just perfectly synchronized. They just can read one another's minds. Ellen knows exactly what she can do at the front counter, and she doesn't care what Bob says. And so if it's something that she can have somebody look at right now, she will. But if not, she'll reschedule. She's just really good. But Bob and Jeremy and the guys in the shop, they're just really, really good. And I just remember that I sent a car that had a very expensive, and I don't remember, but it was in the multi-$1,000 range for a water leak near the windshield of the passenger side of a car. And Bob found the drain plugged up in the evaporator case, and he unplugged the drain. A bunch of water came out, and I think the bill was $175. And he explained what the customer could do to eliminate that from happening again. That's the kind of stories that just really light my fire. It's because I know they're doing what they're supposed to. There's shops I know of that are not on my list that would have been a $300 or $400 or $500 or $600 or $700 repair because they're bidding up against something that might be $1,500 or more. So they're going to be looking like a hero. All right, we got a caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Tom.
Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Appreciate your show.
Thank you. Thank you.
I've got a dilemma. I've got an old 2004 Chevy cargo van with double doors on both sides that I really like.
Okay.
I got to replace it. The engine's got 410,000 miles on it. And my dilemma is, should I rebuild it, get a new engine, and all the accessories that go with an old van, or try and find one that may have problems because the prices on the used vans are crazy.
Okay. You're not likely to find a low-mileage engine that would be a perfect match for your car. I'm going to change your question slightly. Mark, do you put used engine in? Yes, we do. What's the risk about that? Well, the risk is really mine, but every once in a while I just really take it. Sometimes it turns ugly because I'm represented that this motor has low miles, and I put it in, and it's a smoker, it's a leaker, it's a this, it's a that, and I got to do it again. So what about anything in between? Well, Jasper is a company that builds motors that we install. So they're rebuilt in a factory in the Midwest. And the times that we've had problems with them, but we do a lot of their transmissions, differentials, and engines, they just jump. I mean, we are in and out of that car. They put people in rental cars. It is really something special. We had a 72 Ford in there the other day with a 460, and the cylinder had not been perfect, wasn't perfectly round, and we had an oil consumption problem. They finally said, we'll put him in a rental car, we'll take care of all that bill, pull the motor out, send it to us, and they call back and they go, we made a mistake. And I thought, man, that's kind of the way I wanted to do business. And then as far as a new one is concerned, it's okay. We're able to cross that motor in the GM line and find something that they have that could be a new motor or a rebuilt motor from GM. The question is the warranty, and do they cover warranties, and do you have to go back to them, or can you go back to your shop, and who's paying the bill and stuff like that, so you have all this moving parts. So in
that's my concern. Is that I'm not going to be able to work myself. I've got to find somebody up here in Cave Creek area that would do it, or close by, you know.
Okay, well, you're going to get stuck this way because you're going to use if you find a shop, you're going to use the motor he's happy with because right. He doesn't want to do it again. So he may disagree with Mark Salem, but in reality, each one of us has a relationship with different vendors. So if he has a really long-term relationship with a rebuilder here in town and he's really happy with his product, then by all means, both of them are going to stand behind the motor, but yeah. You don't want to go in and tell him to get a Jasper.
Yeah, the risk for me on a new motor or your rebuilt motor compared to buying a expensive, low-mileage van with potential problems is about the same. It's a wash. I'm just concerned with the ancillary problem of the radiator and the air conditioning, the transmission,
And
all those bushings and all the other stuff that involved with the rebuild of the vehicle.
Okay, well, wait a minute. We don't have much time. When we do an engine, we don't want to do the engine without looking at all the ancillary stuff underneath the hood and stuff. I don't want to put an engine in that came in because somebody, you know, it got red hot and then the radiator's plugged up or the fan clutch is bad or something like that. I don't want to be involved in that. So all of us that have got gray hair and we've done this before, we say, Tom, when we do an engine, we're doing the hoses and the belts and the motor mounts, and we're going to do the front seal and the transmission that's staring us in the face when we have your engine out, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that, and we're going to look at your radiator, and we're going to recharge your air conditioning unit. We want to do it all. You know why? Because we own it all.
Right.
And we touched it last, so we want to do it all.
Cost-wise, is that... an efficient way to do it?
Well, yeah, because you only pay for the front seal R&R, and you don't have to pay for the transmission to take it out. And to put a water pump on the motor you're putting in is five or six bolts. Otherwise, you got to take the fan and the fan shroud and all the belts and all the pulleys and everything off to get to...
So do it all at once.
Yeah. All of this...
Okay, I have another question about Ford Del Volato. Is that on your list?
No, and they just recently sold... I want to tell you, Sun Devil has never been on my list because Joel didn't need to be on my list because he had a good market of people. He had a good, him and his son Tom are personal friends of mine, but they sold this Sun Devil Auto and they bought some other independent shops. I'm just a little leery because historically, I've been around a long time, and historically when this happens, things change, and the things that are brought to my attention is pricing. And the price goes up dramatically outside of the market. So the market is in the middle, but they go way high, and that's simply to pay back the investors who bought the facility. But I don't know any of that to be true on Sun Devil. All I would do is if you're going to go to a particular one, go to the Better Business Bureau or go to Yelp and look at that shop and see if they have the same technicians. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're going to be here till 12. We're talking about car repair issues. What should I do about this? What should I spend money for a rebuilt engine or a new engine? And if I buy a rebuilt, from where? And if I buy a new, from where? Or my shop says that I need to come in and see him for an oil change on my new car every 3,000 miles. You want to comment on that? Those are the kinds of things that we do take care of here. 602-508-0960. We've talked about Larry Harker's Auto and numerous times, but they're at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob and Ellen, they're really good at what they do. So if you live in that area, and they have great diagnosticians, guys that they take it personal. It's they're not going to let the car win. Now, when that happens, I can vouch for this. When that happens, they may have taken 4.5 hours to find it, but we're going to bill you 3.2 because 4.5 is just a hard number to swallow when your labor rate might be 120 an hour. So those are the kinds of things that happen behind the scenes where the owner or the owner's wife will just change the labor a little bit because maybe he could have done a little faster or whatever, but it's embarrassing to have a labor bill of $600 to find it. Unless, of course, it's a dollar to fix it, and that would be different. So, Larry Harker's Auto, West Side, covers the West Side, does a good job at that. Let's go to the phones, and let's start with Harry.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning, Harry. How are you?
Pretty good. Hey, I heard you talking about one of your previous callers about a 45,000-mile transmission oil service. And I got kind of a similar deal with a Honda. I have a 2015 Honda, and it calls for a 30,000-mile spark plug changes interval. For a 2015 Honda Pilot.
I don't know. I'd want to know what kind of spark plugs that's in there, because if it's comparable to the old Champion spark plugs, then yes,
right,
had it 10,000-15,000. But if it's a platinum or a double platinum, or if it's a super duper deluxe that costs $15-$20 a piece, then I would Harry, you just take one out and look at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just take one out and look at it.
Well, I thought I'd take a look in the again in the manual and see, because usually a lot of times they'll say what the number of the plug is and what they kind of recommend or whoever.
Harry, get on the internet and just go to Rock Auto, and then punch in your car and then say spark plugs, and it'll bring up just about every brand of spark plug, and you'll be able to tell the level of superiority and the level of quality by the price. Almost always you'll do that by the price. So if you punch in your Honda and it comes back with a spark plug that's between $15 and $20 a piece, those are 100K spark plugs, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Another question I have, too, it calls for, because I know the Hondas, they're kind of still a little bit old school. A lot of their engines, they have solid lifters, so it's calling for adjust the valves at 30,000.
Okay.
It doesn't every 30, but at the first 30,000 market, because mine only has like 29,000.
Okay. So. Well, here's my answer to that. It's real simple. If the valves are too loose, there's a clatter, and if the valves are too tight, there's a backfire. That's all there is to it. If you don't have any clatter and you don't have any backfire, I don't want to adjust your valve. That's all there is to it.
Oh, okay. That's good. Good policy on that. Yeah.
All right.
All right. So okay. That's good. Oh, you have a good holiday.
Thank you. Thank you, Harry. Thank you very much. Mike, you're up. How can I help you?
Hey, I've got a 2005 Nissan two-wheel drive, four-liter pickup, Frontier pickup.
Okay.
And I've got a code TO420, which I believe, according to being told, is the right front catalytic converter.
Okay.
I replaced the catalytic converter. I bought one online. My mistake, I bought a very inexpensive one, probably the most inexpensive one, and after 5 months, that check engine light is on again. So I think I'm just going to go to the dealer and get a probably close to $1,000 catalytic converter and put that in. I'm hoping that'll cure my problem.
That's a huge mistake. I mean, no one knows who Mike is, okay? Nobody knows who Mike is. We don't even know who you are. But this whole thing is, you broke all the rules. The code doesn't mean replace the catalytic converter. The code says, I got a problem with its performance. If you have an injector that's leaking fuel and then the engine's running rich, then the catalytic converter is going to have a tough time doing its job. And the O2 sensor is going to tell on it. The O2 sensor tells the computer, hey, I'm getting readings at this cat that I don't like. And so the computer keeps looking and looking and looking, and it goes, okay, we got a cat code. Well, yeah, we do have a cat code. But we got a leaking injector on the front side of the motor that's causing the problem. We've got somebody who hadn't changed, not you, but sometimes we have somebody who hasn't changed the oil in 100,000 miles, and the oil is just gasoline with oil in it. So we have all the vacuum leaks. A vacuum line comes off. It causes a lean condition. The lean condition sets a code, and it's a cat code. So you could do whatever you want. But I think what I would do, you can't go to the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store, and he's going to read the code and sell you something that goes with that code, like a cat or a set of spark plugs or wires or whatever, because it's 50% of the time it's not that. We have all kinds of codes that are just stranger than strange, and they have nothing to do with the name of the code. So we have throttle position sensors, and TPS sensor will come up, and it says, you know, TPS sensor screaming. Okay, you look at the TPS sensor, and the shaft on the main portion of the throttle body is all worn out. Well, the TPS is seeing all these different numbers that would determine whether it's at idle or wide open throttle. And the TPS is going, I don't know. And the computer is going, I don't know. I've never seen these numbers before. So it sets a code. So some guy will put on three or four TPSs. Then he'll call me and say, well, should I go to the dealer because theirs is better? And I say, no, because the dealer's is the same as what you probably already bought anyway. And so you have all these moving parts. So my advice, which is what you ask for, is find a shop, yeah, have them diagnose the problem, and see what happens. You know how easy it is for us to test a cat? I mean, we have the equipment, we have the knowledge, we have everything. But the first thing we're going to want to do is we're going to want to go in and look to see if the O2 sensor is still alive. Because the only way the computer knows there's a cat code is from an O2 sensor. So we create a lean condition, and we want to see a 1. And we create a rich condition, and we want to see a 5. But you don't have that ability, and neither does the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store, to look at the numbers, and nobody understands the numbers except guys like me. And, you know, shops like mine. So
have it correctly diagnosed, and then I'll go from there.
Yeah, you're going to be so much money ahead. There's so much in the front that can make a cat go have symptoms. We can run lean, a vacuum leak, an EGR valve that's half open, a vacuum line that's fallen off, the EGR valve that's got a diaphragm leak. All of that causes a lean condition, a rich condition, a fuel pressure regulator's leaking gas, the injectors dripping gas, or we have a plugged up air filter which screws up the air to fuel mixture, because instead of being 14-1, 14 parts air, 1 part gas, now we got 8-1 because we're restricting the flow. We've replaced air filters for O2 sensor codes. So,
no kidding.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying, when you take it to a shop, we're going to plug into your car, and we have something in our hand that might be worth $10,000, and it gives us numbers, but you got to know what the number says. So, for instance, everything on a car, for round numbers here, everything on a car is 1 through 5. 1 is low, 5 is high. Okay? Just remember that. 1 is low, 5 is high. So we look at your O2 sensor, and the O2 sensor is in the middle. It's 3. Oh, that's where I want it. That's exactly where I want it. Then you look at the post-cat O2 sensor, the one on the tail end, and we want it at 1, and it's 3. We go, okay, we're not processing here. Whatever's going in is coming out the same. That's a cat code. That now we've come to that conclusion because we've looked at the sensor's two readings. But we got fuel coming in the front and coming out the back clean, then there should not be a code there because the computer or the catalytic converter is doing what it's supposed to, and that's to eliminate raw fuel coming out of the tailpipe. Do you have a shop that you like, or would you like me to recommend one geographically?
I'm going to take it to Kurtz.
Okay.
Kurtz is right by me.
Oh, Kurtz can't fix that. You're going to have to go someplace else, but that's okay. Just tell him I said that. if this turns out, how many miles are on your car?
175.
Okay. Do you ever smell rotten eggs?
Nope.
Okay, that's the converter having a tough time. Those are the gases before they die. and rotten eggs is also a rich condition. We got something up front that's trying, and the catalytic converter is incapable of processing all the fuel that's coming through it. So it finally just gets soaked in gasoline, doesn't light on fire. It's kind of like your briquettes when you're doing your steaks. You just put in like 2 inches of fire starter, and then you light it on fire. That's what a catalytic converter feels like when it's drowning in gasoline from a problem created upstream. But the whole idea of the catalytic converter is consume any fuel that comes out of the engine that's left over, and so what we put back in the tailpipe is clean air, and that's what it is. But Kurtz is a great guy for that.
Is there an average life to a catalytic converter?
Well, and I listened carefully, and so I have you one more question. Have you noticed a loss in power any time in the last six months?
None at all.
Okay. All right, we're done. Because if the catalytic converter is going to die, it almost always melts itself internally, which causes a back pressure problem, which the customer says, well, I just don't have the power I had anymore. And there's some wheezing noises underneath my car. So when I give it gas, it sounds like a vacuum cleaner. And that's the wheezing noise. Well, you didn't say anything about that. So I think the proof in the pudding will be, let's just diagnose the problem and rather than have you spend a whole bunch of money guessing.
Well, I really appreciate your help.
Okay. All right. Good luck, Mike. Good luck. And you know what? I'm going to go past the break because I've got Uncle Buck. Uncle Buck, I've got time for you. Before my break, what corn do you do for you?
Having an 06 Cadillac XLR with the Northstar V8. And I have an intermittent check engine light that comes on. As soon as the check engine light comes on, I do get a noticeable engine miss. And then it clears up, runs smooth as a baby's fanny, power, everything else. Light stays illuminated. And I go to my favorite West Side Cadillac dealer to get the code red, and it's a misfire. However, they don't know where it's misfiring, rather, and that's the term that's used, is a misfire. And me being a smart guy that used to fly jet airplanes, is that a misfire at the coil pack, spark plug wire, spark plug itself? But they can't diagnose the problem. They clear the code, pat me on my bald head, and send me on my way without repairing the car. And I don't like parts thrown at the car because it has 79,000 miles on it.
What's the code? What's the code?
Misfire.
Okay, misfire where?
It does it. The computer on the 06 doesn't give them an area. All they're told is there's a misfire.
Okay, how many miles are on it? How many miles are on it?
179. 179? No. 70, under 100,000. It's okay. 79,000.
79,000. And do you ever smell anything when that thing comes on? Do you smell rotten eggs or anything?
Nope.
Okay. And does it do it cold, hot, intermittently, or no rhyme or reason?
Usually no rhyme or reason, but normally it's at normal operating temperature when the car's been running for a bit. At least, I'm going to say it does it within.
Okay.
Somewhere after.
I'm running late. It's just a kind of a yes or a no. So you don't smell anything, and you can feel it when it happens. But when you get there, all we have is this misfire code that's in real general, but it doesn't attach it to a particular cylinder. So, all right, stay right there. We'll be back, and I got to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me tell you real quick about automatic transmission exchange. Phil and Fred Flintstone are two guys that were born in the same decade. And Phil has been around transmission since 1968. He really is smart, and he understands the fundamentals of shifting a transmission from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 and overdrive and lock up and so forth. But we've changed that, and we've changed it from vacuum to electricity, and now we have sensors, and that's why it's important. If you have a transmission problem, I would suggest that you call Automatic Transmission Exchange and ask them about it first. They've been around a long time. They're on 40th Street in Washington, Automatic Transmission Exchange, and they've been around since 1968, and that's kind of cool. Let's go back to Uncle Buck. Has the spark plugs ever been changed on your Northstar?
Has not.
Okay. Does it make any difference if it's a rainy day versus a dry day, or does the misfire code, is it okay for a week at a time and then comes back with vengeance two or three times in a row?
It usually, once they clear it, it's cleared for 30 to 90 days.
Okay. Well, you probably have coilover ignition. I don't think you have a set of wires on this, do you?
I don't think it does.
Okay.
I haven't seen it with that.
All right.
With the plastic cap that's covered the top of the manifold, I can't see anything.
Okay. If these are the original spark plugs, all we have to do is pull one and look at it, and we can tell pretty quick. If these are the original spark plugs, there's two things. This is me talking on the front counter. I can't guarantee we're going to fix anything. It's an intermittent problem, and your software or your car can't communicate with our very sophisticated software because it didn't gather the misfire area. So if you want, you got 79,000 miles on it. It's been around the world three times. And so let's go ahead and change the spark plugs. And while we change the spark plugs, we're going to pull them out one at a time. We're going to lay them down, and we're going to compare them. And if we find a cracked porcelain, we're going to go, there it is right there. Or if we find a misfire because the end of it looks different than all the other ones, there's the misfire there. At the same time, we're going to put new plugs in, and we're going to use some dielectric grease inside the boot of whether it's a wire or if it's a coil sitting on top of the spark plug. We're going to use a little dielectric grease, which waterproofs that connection, but it also, dielectric, it helps the electrical connection stay there for a long time. So we're really, if you have a misfire and it comes and goes, almost always it has to do with the spark plug or the coil to the spark plug, you know, message, which is the wire or the coil boot. Now the boot sits down over the spark plug, and sometimes the boot will have a hole in it, and the spark will jump to the side of where the spark plug is positioned. And usually a customer might hear that sometimes because he'll hear a snapping noise in his garage with his hood open. And sometimes if he just stands there for a few minutes, he'll hear that snapping noise. It's irregular, but it sounds like a spark. So I think if you wanted to try it, I think you have an 80% chance of fixing it with a fresh set of spark plugs, checking out the boots, a little dielectric grease inside the boot, snap them all back together, and I think now this next step is that if this is in fact an intermittent misfire, you better hope and pray it ain't mechanical, that we don't have a valve dancing around in a seat, or that we don't have some kind of an intake leak where intermittently, depending on the temperature of the engine, we're sucking air causing a misfire. Because the computer can see that cylinder didn't contribute, but it doesn't know that it's the right amount of fuel, but it's an abundance amount of air, where we want a 14-to-1 ratio, one part fuel and 14 parts air. Well, that balance isn't something we can see on a car you're of your age. So my advice would be, based on, if you want to guess, I think mine, talk to your service drive guy, but I think most everybody will agree that let's do the spark plugs, a little dielectric, put everything back together, and let's inspect the boots when we take the spark plugs out, and let's inspect the spark plugs. Can we see the misfire? And about 50% of the time we can see it. We'll actually say, here, look at this. This is number 3 and this is number 6. Look at the difference. You see that little carbon line right there? That's your misfire. So that's kind of how it works. Uncle Buck, thanks very much for calling. That's a tough one. And keep in mind, his Cadillac was an 06. Today, we have much more sophisticated software that will give us more information. But in 06, it was like Fred Flintstone, and today, we're way past Bill Gates with Microsoft Windows and stuff like that. So we have a lot more, but again, it's still information. And the code just means the computer says it's in this circuit, and that circuit's going to have 4, 5, or 6 different components or problems that can cause that code. So just because you get an O2 sensor code doesn't mean it's an O2 sensor. And let me explain real quick. The O2 sensor simply has a 1 through 5 value. 1 is lean, otherwise the O2 sensor goes, hey computer, I'm not seeing a lot of fuel in this exhaust. And 5 means, holy mackerel, it's raining gasoline. So those are the extremes. We want in the middle, 2.5, somewhere around in there. So to test an O2 sensor, we hook up our equipment, and then we create a lean condition. we add air to the engine. Maybe we pull the PCV valve line off of it and give it some fresh air. We need to see that O2 sensor go to 1. But if it doesn't, and we do it again and again, and it doesn't go to 1, then we go, okay, it's not responding. So we put a new one in, and it, poof, it goes to 1 immediately when it should be at 2.5 or 3. So then we make it run rich. So we add fuel to the air intake. We make the engine run with more fuel than it normally does, and all of a sudden, it goes to 5. And we go, that's what we wanted to see. So we create a lean condition, a whole bunch of air, a little bit of fuel, and we want to see a 1. We create a rich condition where we have a lot of fuel and a little bit of air, and we better see a 5. In simplistic ways, that's how it works. Obviously, I'm using numbers to help with on radio, but in reality, we're looking at some very sophisticated numbers on the O2 sensor. But basically, that's the same thought process. One is, and typically, when you get a return signal from some electronic component, the low number is lean and the high number is rich, typically. However, there's a Chrysler or two out there that Chrysler switched that number, and sometimes that creates a problem in its of itself. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have open lines available. We have 5. Gil's the one that answers the phone. So if you call 602-508-0960, Gil answers the phone. He says, KKNT, would you like to talk to Mark? And you say yes. And he says, what's your name? And you say, and he says, okay. He'll say, you're first in queue, you're second in queue, you're third in queue, or something like that. So Gil's the engineer that makes the show really as good as it is. Because if it were up to me, we'd be struggling for a lot of different things. So if you like the show,
1 minute,
it's Gil's fault. And if you like the show, it's Gil's doing, I should say. It's not his fault. It's his doing. If the show really turns really bad, like stinky socks, it's always my fault. So it's just as long as we make that clear. 602-508-0960. I've been at KKNT. I was 10 years on the 5th of this month. November 5th, 10 years ago, was my first show on KKNT. We've had a great relationship. I think that they've called me once or twice with the leading question that starts off with, did you really say on the radio, and then fill in the blank. And I'm still here. So obviously my apology or my explanation was satisfactory, but it is the best radio station I've ever worked for. And that 10 years shows it. I've worked for 5, but by far KKNT is the best. It has the best management and the best team. So if I'm good, then they make me look better. Welcome back. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We're going to go straight to the callers right after this. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Nate is one of the best diesel guys I've ever met in my life. I really admire him for one thing that sometimes I struggle with, and that is he can talk to somebody on the phone, and if they answer the questions truthfully, he can get pretty close to the diagnosis. That's kind of scary, but he's really good. And keep in mind, he's got 3 kinds of diesel he's worked on: Ford, Chevy, and Dodge. So if you've got a diesel problem and nobody else can fix it, then Strictly Diesel Service and Repair should be the next place you go. Henry, how are you, and how can I help you?
Wow, what timing. Listen to that.
Oh, are you flushing the toilet?
I just, what timing, my prison wife. Anyway, 2 questions.
Okay.
First one, I've got a motorcycle with a stuck front caliper. So I was riding it, and I felt the drag, and I figured, well, I can get to the shop before anything goes bad. And then I'm riding along, all of a sudden, it just releases. So did the piston heat up and was freed and able to move back into the caliper from the heat that I generated off the rotor?
No, because you would have had to have got that really, really, really hot where you could smell the brakes in order to cause that kind of a problem. To be perfectly honest with you, I probably wouldn't do anything. If you wanted to, take the caliper off, take the reservoir cover off, and surround it with rags. You're going to take your C-clamp and just push the piston in gently to the bottom with a C-clamp. Now, that's going to bubble fluid up. And that's the reason why I say surround your reservoir with rags. So now that you've done that, put the caliper back on and start pumping the brake lever slowly as you push the piston back out. When you do that, listen. Because if you pump, you pump, no noise, pump, and then all of a sudden you pump the third time and it goes pop. well, it's hanging up, and you need to replace the caliper. But if it doesn't, and it moves smoothly out and touches the pad, then it was probably just one of those, you know, some one of those that you misbehaved, and the Lord said, I'm going to hang up your caliper.
Well, it's an 82 bike, so it probably hadn't been serviced. The second one is this, real quick. So, is there a noise law in Phoenix for exhaust, for car exhaust, or is it just in Cave Creek? Because I see that sign only when I enter Cave Creek, like motorcycle decibel noise.
Well, I'm a former law enforcement guy, plus I'm a mechanical expert, and I think the hard part, if I was talking to the police departments, was, is what kind of meter do you have and how far away are you from the noise? And then,
yeah, I mean, I got passed by a Mustang that sounded like it was at the drag strip.
Well,
and it was going through the gears.
All right, but let me answer your first question. I agree with that. I'm agreed. There's lots of loud ones out there, but there is a complete process. In order to be fair, you have to be so many feet away, or you have to be this way far away, and they have to be going this speed, because some cars are going to make more noise when they're accelerating from 40 to 50 than they are from 20 to 30. So you have all of that. I see that in Cave Creek too, and I smile when I see it, because I don't ever see anything out there, and it would be such a tremendous waste of talent to have somebody out there with a sound gun, because some lawyer's going to eat that cop's lunch when they start talking about DBs and what's a normal car and what's a normal motorcycle and all that other kind of stuff. This is a whole big can of worms, but if the sign works, then Mark Salem is fine with it. So good luck to you, Henry. All right, thank you very much. Sam, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi. I got a question about the front axles or CV boots. It's a 2006 Altima with a four-cylinder.
Okay. 2 minutes.
And the boots on the inner passenger and driver's side are gone. I mean, they're open. You can see inside there. So the grease has come out. I'm just wondering, is it okay to just replace the boots, or should I do the axles as well?
It depends on when you take it apart. And if you pull the axle out of it, then you're going to cut the old boot off and the two bands, and then you're going to wash it and clean it up with solvent. Then you're going to look inside. And if the ball and socket is nice and clean, and we haven't had a bunch of dirt in there that would act like a sandblast machine, then a lot of guys will put them back together. My shop, we're not going to put it back together, because if I make the wrong call, I have to do it again on my dime. So I'm going to say, if you got a torn boot and I find any kind of dirt inside that boot at all, then I want to put a rebuilt axle on it, the whole thing. And that's okay, your cheapest bet.
It would seem like it's a no-brainer just to replace both axles with the boots and the grease and everything complete.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And the other question is, if I do this myself, working in the driveway with the car jacked up, you know, 8 or 10 inches so I can get under it, is that something feasible to do?
More than likely, you're going to call me next week and ask me how to get out of the mess you're in.
And
your wife called first. I'm just telling you that. Your wife called first. And here's the deal. You're going to mess up all the alignments when you start taking those spindles apart. So you have to have it aligned anyway. And so as you go through all of this, not always you have to align it. It just depends on which way we get the axle out. But you have to bust the lower ball joint loose off to take it off the end of the axle, and then you have to slide it out. This is a big job. On a 1 to 10 scale, this is an 8. And the chances of a novice causing big-time problems with a hammer are more than 50%. So,
okay, because I've seen some of the YouTube videos where you just release that one knuckle, and then you turn the steering to the left if you're taking the left one out, or and you pull it out with that knuckle release so you can get that axle out. But
okay, well, you got to release
taken off.
You got to release the axle. You got to release the knuckle. Then you got to put it back together, and you'll probably use a pickle fork to release the knuckle. And do you have a pickle fork?
Right.
That means you'll go rent one. And then when you do it, if you don't do it right, the pickle fork's going to damage the boot on the bottom ball joint. Now you're going to have to take the arm off and take it down to a machine shop and have them press out the old one and push in a new one. But at my shop, we have a tool that does it right there on the car. This, again, this is an 8 on a 10 scale. And chances,
yeah.
And so Mark, do you see people have these towed in a lot like this? Yes. Yes.
Okay. Where they've tried to work on it and can't do it and have to have it towed in and fixed.
I'll give you a really bad example. We had a guy that put one axle on. Then he said, it's easy. I'll do another. So he has this bad vibration. Nobody can fix it. So he ends up in our door. We say, we'll look at it. So we look at it and we tell him, we don't know. We know you have a vibration. We know there's a problem, but we don't know. So he says, what would you do? And I said, what I'd do is I'd order a matched set of axles, and I'd put both of them in. If the vibration goes away, then one of the two we took out are not right. So what are you going to do then? Well, hell, you're going to leave the two in there that I put in that fixed the problem. So, and that was a worst case scenario and he laughed but then when we took and we did an autopsy on one of the axles, what happened is he didn't get, we compared the two axles we ordered with the two axles we took out, and there was a physical difference in one of them, both in length and diameter and all that kind of stuff. So what happened is somewhere along the line, somebody looked up the wrong number. So we said to him, one axle was different from the other, and we fix the vibration. What do you want us to do?
Okay, the axles. I know the length really matters. Like the left, if the left is 29 3/4, the new one has to be close to that. Within how much?
No, it has to be close to that. But you have to collapse the two of them, and then you have to count the splines, and you have to count the depth of the splines. So it's the overall length, the overall compressed. Then you have to look at the splines on both ends, and you have to look at the races. They have to physically look the same as the axle that you've got in your hand.
Right.
So if you're going to do the drivers first, take the driver's axle out, take it down, and make sure that you push down, you set it on its nose, and you push down on it, and you take the overall length then. It's a collapsed length.
Okay.
And then make sure that you set them side by side, and they're exactly the same. And if they're not exactly the same, he's either going to say, well, this is the one it calls for, or he's going to say, no, this is the only one that you can have. That's the only thing my book does, and then you're going to have to make a decision on what you're going to do. I got to run, Sam. And Brad, you stay right there, because then on the other side of this break, I'm going to get you. 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I promised Brad we're going to go. And, Sam, there was just one other thing. I would do one axle at a time. For this reason, if everything's fine and there's no clicking, no vibrations and everything, then you know that axle's the right one and it's okay. If you do both of them at the same time and you end up with a clicking noise or a vibration, you're not sure which one of them it is. So just maybe take my advice and do them one at a time. Brad, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
You bet. Great. So, say I have a 2019 Ram 2500 6.7 liter turbo diesel. I heard you on previous episodes talking about a lighter weight oil that you get better gas mileage with. What would you recommend in that?
What does your manual say on your 19? I think it's a 020, isn't it?
Well, no, actually, I think it's a 1030.
Okay. I think that might be one of the optional oils, but I'm using a 020 synthetic in my diesel.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if towing or not?
No, I'm hauling horse trailers with 1 to 4 horses, and I'm hauling heavy trailers with a bobcat in them as I bring them down to the valley for service, mine just rolled over 140,000 miles. It's a 12, so that's not a whole lot of mileage for a 12, but mine's like yours, except mine's a 3500 instead of a 2500. Every once in a while, I'll run an oil test on the oil we drain and send it to the lab, and I'm looking for growth of aluminum or pot or just growth of water, growth of fuel. I mean, I'm looking at the oil to give me something, and all my oil analyses are fine. But I like the 020 because, first of all, I can go to 10,000 mile on my oil changes. Second of all,
right.
I know that in cold weather, because like up here where we're at, outside of Payson, it's not uncommon to be in the 20s in the mornings. And when I go out to feed the fish in the horse's water tank, I have to break the ice. And so yeah. I like the idea of that zero weight. You know, it flows like a zero when it's cold. Now, the flip side is it flows like a 20 weight when it's hot. But that's okay because I know this synthetic offers tremendous protection. And then my oil analysis is saying everything is fine. So I'm pretty happy with what I've been doing. But you could go with a what was the weight that the manual called for, a 1030?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. And I could, you know, I'd have to ask my son. He does the oil changes on it. I thought I was in a 020, but they make a 1030 conventional, they make a 1030 semi-synthetic, and I think now they make a 1030 syn, the synthetic oil. Each one of them has a different range of use. The conventional oil is 3,000 to 5,000 miles. You need to change it. The other one is 7,500 to about 10,000 miles, which is the semi-synthetic. Then the synthetic goes from 10 on. And that's kind of how it is.
Right.
So you might ask your shop, but the owner's manual is going to be your Bible. Whatever it says, that's what's best for your motor. They're going to give you a weight. They're not going to give you a brand. So you can pick
right
then. Does that do it?
That does it. Okay. I appreciate it.
Okay, Rick. Thank you very much for holding as long as you did. Anyway, your owner's manual is the Bible for your car, and I object to even my own staff arguing with the manual. Every once in a while, you'll run across something that will conflict with common sense. They might want you to. I'm looking for something silly, stupid. They might want you to back flush the refrigerant in your air conditioning system, and we all know that that's just stupid, and that's an expensive piece of equipment that we can sell you a whole lot of work. And so, and then the question is how many cars do you repair that the repair would not have happened had we not waved this magic wand over your air conditioning system? And the answer is zero. Okay, we have another caller.
Say hello to Richard.
Richard, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. Thank you.
You've helped me before and put my 2006 Toyota Camry. Now we have a 2005 Chevy Cobalt.
Okay.
Four-door. And it doesn't run. And I'm looking for a garage or something we can tow it to that you feel safe with. I'm in Fountain Hills.
Okay. Here's what I want to know, though. Doesn't run means so many different things. Let's narrow it down. Does it crank over?
No. Right now it's been sitting there probably for about 3 months. Nobody even tried.
Okay.
So the battery, I'm sure, is dead.
Okay.
When it was cranking, but it wouldn't start.
Okay. Okay.
And then it just died.
Okay. All right. So it's a crank, but no starts. See, that makes a difference for this reason. When they say, my car doesn't start, do I start with a battery, alternator, regulator, and do some ground fault testing, which could cost
right
$60. Wait a minute. Oh, he said it cranks over, so all of that is unnecessary. So when we crank, all we need is spark and fuel. So let me check fuel pressure, and let me check spark. You see? So the closer we get to the conversation, then the cheaper it is for the customer. So in your case, the last time I tried, it would crank over fine, but it wouldn't catch.
That's, and
if you use that. Now, I'm going to give you something to try. It works maybe 20% of the time. Crawl underneath there and kick the bottom of the fuel tank as hard as you can 3 or 4 times.
Just, wow.
Or use a hammer. Use a rubber mallet. And just bonk it really good. Okay? Now, before you do that, step number one is turn the key on. Or have your wife sit in the car. Make sure that she's got the parking brake on and make sure you didn't make her mad that morning. Okay? So you're going to get underneath there and you're going to say, okay, honey, turn the key on, but not to the crank. Just turn the key on where the radio comes on. Okay? And at this point, you listen back at the gas tank and you don't hear anything. So you take that rubber mallet and you beat on the gas tank 2 or 3 times, and then all of a sudden you hear this. And then it'll go off. And you go, honey, see if it'll start, and make sure the tailpipe isn't at your face. And she starts up, and you go, okay, good. Well, the fuel pump is bad, and you beat on the tank, and it's an electric motor. And so you jarred it enough to get it to work. And so if you wanted to do that, there's some risk here. First of all, if you made her mad that morning because you told her that you thought she was gaining some weight, she's probably going to back over you. And all those
I don't
other
think she'd do that.
I'm just using it as a humorous example.
I know.
But it, you know, that's kind of what I would do, because we need spark and fuel, and the most likely reason on your cobalt that you're cranking over and the speed of the crank is fine, it's fuel.
I'm sorry.
Is she trying to, is she been drinking already this morning?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's her daughter.
I'm just teasing you. All righty, Richard. Well, good luck to you, buddy. Good luck.
Before you go, is there a garage I could go to get some of this stuff done?
Tell me what part of town you're in.
Fountain Hills.
Now, you got to come south. I don't have anybody in Fountain Hills. I'd love to give you, but I got Action Auto at Deer Valley and I-17, and I got Kurtz at Bell and I-17. And both of those guys would have no problems with this, but I apologize.
That's okay. What were those two? I didn't get them. I'm sorry.
Oh, Kurtz Automotive or Action Automotive. And Kurtz is on Bell I-17, and Action is on Deer Valley and I-17.
Trying to figure out which one would be. Oh, probably Kurtz would be.
On Bell, yeah. Now, Fountain Hills, isn't that straight out on Pima Road?
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't have anybody in North Scottsdale that I can give you. I don't have anybody up. Now, 40th and Greenway, are you close to 40th and Greenway?
Not really.
Okay. Because 40th and Greenway is Blackwells. Now, Pima, which is north into Fountain Hills, I think, is basically 88th Street. So,
yeah. 89th. You said 40 and Greenway. What was the name of the place?
Blackwell Automotive. Blackwell. Tom Blackwell. He's a good guy. He wouldn't have any problem fixing your car. On a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 3 for a senior gray-haired guy with a little bit of gray hair out of his nose or his ears or something like that. Somebody
that sounds good. I like an old man. I'm an old man.
That's why I'm describing it. Usually the older guy's been there, done that. So I can't tell you how many people have called me back and told me that they beat on the bottom of the tank, they heard the bzzz, the fuel pump come alive, and I say to them, the fuel pump may have a relay, you want to change the relay first, and then that may be, but most of the time it's the pump. So those are
I wouldn't know how to do any of that stuff,
okay,
to tell you the truth.
All right. Well, the relay plugs into the fuse box. That's easy. It says fuel pump right on it. You just pull it out, go to the auto parts store and say, give me another one. Now, you could do that, and that's pretty doggone cheap. You could do that yourself. Pull the cover off the fuse panel, look underneath the cover, and it gives you a matrix of what everything is. And if it says fuel pump relay is number 6, you look down, pull out number 6, take it to the auto parts store, plug a new one in, see if it'll start and run.
Do you have anybody in Tempe?
Me, Warner, and I-10. Give me another Tempe. Give me another area of Tempe.
Close to like, what am I thinking of? 87 turns into...
Country Club.
Country Club, right.
Yeah.
Right around Country Club.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Now that's kind of Mesa Thompson's. Thompson's is over at Main Street and Stapley. That's kind of in the heart of Mesa. But it's just right off of Stapley is east, I don't know what, 2 or 3 miles from Country Club? 4 miles from Country Club? So, and you yeah, you give them a call, they'll be good to you. Okay, thank you very much, Richard. It makes a big difference on ladies. I'm speaking to the ladies now. You want to try to avoid having your husband tell you to tell the shop how to fix your car. Most of us are well-versed in those kinds of, you know, dances. So it's kind of like, okay, what'd your husband say? And then we write it all down diligently. But then we ask questions, who's the main driver? And we hope that the woman in front of us is the main driver. And she says, well, I am. And I say, well, can we ask you a couple questions? Does it do it hot or cold, left or right, fast or slow? How long is it okay? Oh, it's okay for a week. And then what happens? And then it happens 3 or 4 times. And what do you do to fix it? Nothing. I go out and I hit the key and it doesn't start. And I know it won't start. And so I go from there. That's the kind of conversation we want to have. We don't want the Google world to tell you how to fix your car, because they're no better than I am without fuel pressure readings and without checking the relay for the fuel pump and for without making sure that the tank has gas in it. I can't tell you how many times a year a car gets towed in where it cranks and won't start and it's out of gas. And so you put 5 gallons in and boom, you got fuel pressure, it starts and runs. You look at the gauge, you don't know what happened. Hey, has the gauge been reliable? Yes, it has. Well, it wasn't this time because I did see it at the empty side. But as soon as I added gas, it popped up to quarter tank and the car starts. So, you know, those are the kinds of dilemmas that we have, not on a regular basis, but often enough. So if you want to go to my website, marksalem.com, you can, and all the good shops are listed there. And there's a lot of information in the FAQ section. And there's also my email address there. If you have a question, I'd be happy to entertain it. Then you just send it to me. If you would please give me a phone number, I will call you back from a blocked number for obvious reasons. But I'll usually do it right after you give me the email. So, and then I say, this is Mark Salem, don't hang up, and usually they don't. So I'll see you next Saturday right here on 960 KKNT.